What you're about to listen to is a booklet originally written by John Simpson on behalf of the Helmshaw Local History Society back in the 1980s. It's entitled Ellen Strange, A Moorland Murder Mystery Explained. This was republished and revised in a new booklet for Unite the Union on 2015. And Helmshaw Local History Society began by thanking Unite North West Region, the Unite Bolton Branch and Bolton Trades Council for raising the funds to pay for this booklet, as well as Doug Pipes at Unite for the layout of the work. The original initiative to reprint the booklet came as a result of the Unite Rebel Road project that celebrates trade union and labour movement heroes that have been publicly recognised in one form or another, such as a plaque, a statue or a building named after them. For those who want to see more about this, they should go to writer Mark Metcalfe's website and access it through the link to the Rebel Road project. The Ellen Strange story. Generations of Helmshaw people have heard the story of Ellen Strange and taken the old road onto the moor above Robin Hood's Well to see the pile of stones, which is said to mark the spot where the young woman from Hawkshaw Lane was murdered. Details of the crime have long been forgotten, and local documents in which they would have been recorded have not survived. What follows explains and dates the Ellen Strange story exactly, and also shows how facts can be replaced by fiction and how a straightforward and simple tale can be transformed into a colourful but misleading legend. The traditional story. Though the first edition of the 6-inch Ordnance Survey map surveyed in 1844-47 marks the cairn and calls it simply Ellen Strange, the first written account of the story did not appear for another 30 years or so. It took the form of a poem by John Fawcett Skelton in his book Hawkshaw Lane and Other Poems, published in Manchester in 1872. Skelton was a native of Bolton and a member of the town council there. He was a man of private means and, as an obituary in the Bolton Chronicle puts it, of a literary and poetic turn. For a time in the 1870s, he lived in Hawkshaw Lane. His poem recounts the Ellen Strange story thus, "But ere we bid the hill a fond farewell, list, and I will a painful story tell. Whilst love and murder and remorse exchange sad places in the tale of Ellen Strange, a country maid whose heart was full of truth, at Ash Farm passing guileless days of youth, spotless as winter's snow her woman's fame, her daily actions free from worldly blame, until the light of love shone in her eyes, no blither lassie lived beneath the skies. A man in farm, but devil from the womb, a fiend on this side and beyond the tomb. Such was the packman who by Satan's aid won the fair love of this misguided maid. Though Ellen had been brought her love to own, ne'er had she met her lover all alone. Her guardian angel bade her answer, no, when oft and o'er again he wished it so, feeling instinctively a kind of dread of some misfortune hanging o'er her head. A manly friend mistrustful of the Scot, oversaw Ellen to the trusting spot. Then kept aloof, yet watched the wooing pair. 'Twas Ellen's wish, so all was right and fair. At length, through love's reproach or cruel threat, alas, she came alone, and so they met, and so they met. But how shall I proceed? My muse is loath to tell so dark a deed. And so they met in their embrace of blood, and murdered Ellen, facing a frowning God. The villain fled across the ghostly heath, o'er flax moss and the red brook stretched beneath, and red and reeking truly was its wave to him who hurried to a murderer's grave. Yon where the chiselled pavement length lies, o'er which the woman killer painting hies, tradition says, and seldom she's a liar, at every step his foot struck venging fire. No further will we track the man of blood, but leave him to his conscience and to God. A heap of stones still marks the fatal spot to tempt aside the curious stranger's foot. Not picked and carted there in careless loads from off the heather and the mountain roads, but one by one by trembling fingers laid down to the memory of this hapless maid, and to this present wandering lover's dear still drop a stony tribute and a tear. Skelton's references to the Scot can be explained by the fact that the old North Country term for a peddler or packman was a Scotsman. Ash Farm, Ellen's supposed home, was in Hawkshaw Lane. Its site is near a bungalow called Ashfield, and no doubt Skelton heard the story of the murder while living in the vicinity. We shall never know how widespread the tale of Ellen Strange was before the poem was written, but within a few years of its publication, other, more detailed accounts appeared. The Bake-Up Times for the 21st of August, 1875, reported the Saturday excursion of the Bake-Up Literary Club and included a brief reference to the cairn and its story. The party proceed in the direction of Stake Lane, passing on the way a cairn of stones which has a romantic history. It is related that this spot was formerly the scene of a murder committed more than a century ago by a young man upon his sweetheart, a young woman by the name of Jane Strange, whom he decoyed to this solitary place. He was apprehended at Haslington and afterwards tried at Lancaster, and on being found guilty he was sentenced to be hung and afterwards gibbeted on the very spot where the horrible crime was committed. It is said that the remains of the gibbet were to be seen there up to about 90 years ago. One of the excursionists was Henry Stevenson, local historian and headmaster of Haslington Church School. On the 27th of November 1878, he noted another account of the story in his diary, told by William Warburton, Billy Guy, that a man was gibbeted near the Hare and Hounds on Town Green for the murder of his sweetheart. He was a native of Stonefold and she of Edgeworth. They met at Haslington Fair and seen together at the Bull's Head and the Stoop Alehouse, the White Horse, and also in Dearden Gate, but she was not heard of any more. Her parents, coming to look for her, went to Stonefold, but he denied having seen her. They went to Bolton and obtained a bloodhound, which, being brought along the road from Haslington to Edgeworth by Flaxmus and the Stake Lane, scented her body beneath a pile of stones on the moor, a little above Robin Hood's Well. The murderer confessed his guilt, was hanged, and then gibbeted near the Hare and Hounds, and afterwards on Bull Hill, where the body remained for some time. The post and chains have been seen by several persons now living. The place on the moor where her body was found is still called Ellen Strange's grave. In a list of old Haslington place names, which Stevenson compiled, he wrote under the heading Stoop House, the old name given to the White Horse on account of the two pillars in front. It was so known at the time when a woman named Ellen Strange, returning from Haslington Fair with her sweetheart over the moors towards Edgeworth, he murdered her and buried her body on the moor. Overcome with fear, he credits the seer, he made a compact with the evil one to aid him. So he returned, and so rapid was his speed that his clogs struck fire every step he took as he came up Flaxmoss. He was taken a prisoner at the Stoop House, and being brought to justice, he was at last obliged to confess his guilt. He was hanged at Lancaster, and his body was gibbeted on Bull Hill. Anne Holden, now living at Flaxmoss, says she remembers seeing the post. The place where she was murdered is still known as Ellen Strange's grave and is so marked on the ordnance map. It can yet be found because the spot is marked by a pile of stones to which people passing used to add one more. These various accounts combine to form the story of Ellen Strange. Since the late 19th century, it has been retold many times in local newspapers, pamphlets and magazines. And in 1986 it reached a national readership in Secret Britain, published by the AA. This version of the tale repeated an error which had previously appeared elsewhere. The White Horse, the Stoop Alehouse, was not the pub of that name in Helmshaw, but was a much older pub in the top of the town area of Haslington. It was demolished in the 1930s. A photograph in the pamphlet The Tragedy of Ellen Strange, purporting to show the old White House alehouse at which the murderer was arrested is actually Old Rock's farm on Alden Road on the site now occupied by Alden Lee. The mix-up over the two public houses is in fact only one of several ways in which the whole business has been dogged by confusion. For example, one Sunday afternoon in the years before the First World War, a party of schoolboys from Helmshaw visited the cairn and moved the whole thing some distance across the moor. In the summer of 1978, a ceremony took place at the site as part of Rossendale Carnival Day. At dusk on 24th of June, a group of people gathered on the moor to watch a reenactment of the murder. The cairn was surrounded by poles bearing white cloths painted with words such as grave, devil, snow, blood and tears. There were also two giant figures of Ellen and her murderer and a newly erected stone column carved with a representation of the victim. The stone was intended as a permanent memorial to the events which had taken place on the same spot. Within a few years, however, it was adding to the general confusion by being mistaken for an ancient waystone bearing a carving of the Virgin Mary and Christ Child. The book quotes on that Howard May, Jumbles to Holcombe via Helmshaw, The Lancashire Life, August 1985, page 43. One of the organisers of the event was quoted in local newspapers as saying that it was intended as a sort of exorcism of the horror of the story, but added that it would not be anything grotesque. This is quoted in the Haslingden Borough News of the 28th of April 1978 and then in the Lancashire Evening Telegraph of the 20th of April 1978. Nevertheless, it brought criticism from some villagers and councillors and prompted members of Helmshaw Local History Society to look again at the story. The resulting quest was to last on and off for 10 years. The search for the truth. The most difficult problem facing the researchers in 1978 was that nobody knew where the murder had taken place. Richard Hawken and Patrick Stevens, two local historians writing in the 1920s, suggested 1735 as the year in which Ellen Strange was murdered. They based their calculations on the fact that people living in the 1870s said they could remember a gibbet post standing. They suggested that these people had seen the post in their youth in the early 19th century, and that if it had been made of oak, it could have been standing for some considerable time before that. Anne Holden, who according to Henry Stevenson could remember seeing the remains of the post, appears at Flaxmoss in the 1881 census and was born in about 1818. Another suggested date for the murder was 1784, and it was while searching local parish registers around that date that the first real discovery was made. The burial registers for Holcombe Parish Church contain the following entry. 1781, Widow Strange from Ash, March the 4th. This at least confirmed that the Strange family were living at Ash Farm in the 18th century, and there was a real possibility that Widow Strange was the murdered woman's mother. A further possible clue came in the form of an entry in the baptismal register of the Presbyterian Chapel, Dundee Lane in Holcombe. On the 11th of April 1728, the christening took place of a girl whose name is given as Ellen Strange Roiland from Rakefoot. The word Roiland has been added to the entry, although in the same hand. No explanation has been found for the child, apparently having two surnames, unless it was meant to indicate that she was illegitimate. If this was the murdered girl, however, it seemed reasonable to assume that the crime had taken place in the late 1740s. Or 1750s. Using this as a starting point, several volunteers tackled the records of the Palinet of Lancaster for those decades. They were, of course, seeking a woman called Strange, but no one of that name figured in any document. As a county palatine, Lancashire had its own judicial system, which produced its own set of records. They included assize rolls, depositions, indictments, and the so-called minute books, which are of the nature of an index to the business conducted at each session of the assizes. The depositions and indictments for the 1740s and 1750s contained no reference to the case, nor did the minute books, which were in fact checked for the whole of the 18th century. This was discouraging. Was the story simply a folktale after all? Had the events happened much earlier than we thought? These questions remained unanswered until the autumn of 1988, when it became possible to make a systematic search of the records of all coroner's inquests held in Lancashire in the 18th century. Amongst these dusty parchments lay the answer to the mystery, the Ellen Strange story, the true story. On the 28th of January 1761, a group of 14 good and lawful men from the townships of Tottingham Higher End, Tottingham Lower End, Walmersley and Haslenden were summoned to stake a farm perched on the edge of Holcombe Moor, not far from what was then the road to Holcombe. Also present was Simon Dearden, coroner and attorney at law from Rochdale. Their task was to hold an inquest on the body of a woman who had been murdered 2 days previously, not far away on the moor. With the inquest completed, the body was carried down and buried in the churchyard at Holcombe. The woman's name was Ellen Broadley. The inquest jury declared that her husband John, not having God before his eyes, but being moved by the instigation of the devil, had assaulted his wife at the first hour in the night on 26th of January. They went on to say that he violently, feloniously, voluntarily, and of his malice forethought, struck, kicked, strangled and squeezed, suffocated and mortally wounded his wife, and that she'd instantly died from her wounds. The ruins of Stake Farm, where the inquest was held in 1761, still exist today. John Broadley was a labourer from Clayton Lee Moors. He and his wife had probably been married for at least 10 years at the time of her murder. Among the records of the quarter sessions now in the Lancashire archives, there's a document dated the 18th of September 1751, which ordered the removal of John Broadley and Ellen, his wife, from Clayton Lee Moors to Huncourt, the place of their last legal settlement. This was done so that as paupers, they would not become a charge on the township of Clayton. Whether or not this order was effective, John had certainly moved back to Clayton by the beginning of 1761. Following the murder and the discovery of the body, he was arrested and taken to Lancaster Castle to await trial at the Lent Assizes, 1761. Broadley was indicted for the murder of his wife by Lawrence Elton, one of the constables for the township of Tottingham Higher End. Of course, there are no eyewitness accounts of the trial, but the procedures were so standardised that we can get a good idea of the scene in the courtroom. First of all, the accused was called to the bar and addressed by the clerk. John Broadley, hold up thy hand. The clerk then read out the indictment and asked, how sayest thou, John Broadley? Art thou guilty of this felony, as it is laid in this indictment, whereupon thou'st indicted or not guilted? Not guilty, came the reply. Culprit, how wilt thou be tried, said the clerk. By God and the country, Broadley replied. At this point, the prisoner would have had any irons or shackles he was wearing removed for the remainder of the trial, and the jury was sworn in. Most of the 12 men who were present for the Broadley case were from villages around Preston, the two exceptions coming from near Ormskirk and Darwin. After they had taken the oath, the actual trial could begin. The prosecution of the case may have been in the hands of Fletcher Norton, who was King's attorney and the sergeant at law for the County Palatine of Lancaster, and whose name appears in the records of the trial. He was known by the nickname of Sir Buffus Doublefees, and it was said of him that he had great knowledge and excellent judgment, but his patience is not equal to the other qualities. Several witnesses were called to give evidence against Broadley. They were Lawrence Eaton, the Tottingham Higher End Constable, Roger Welsh from Tottingham Lower End, John Rothwell from Holcombe Head, a farm only a short distance across the fields from Ash Farm, Roger Booth, a doctor from Tottington, who had perhaps examined the body, Mary, wife of Joshua Smith, and Alice, wife of Henry Elson, a Haslenden innkeeper. These witnesses took the oath and gave the evidence in open court. It was not the practice to write down such evidence, and we will never know what they said. All that we can be sure of is that their evidence was insufficient to convict Broadley. Given the time and place of the murder, there were probably no eyewitnesses, a fact which may have influenced the jury and returned a verdict of not guilty. On his acquittal, Broadley was made to kneel, and the judge pronounced him discharged. Acquittals for murder because of a lack of evidence were fairly common, and a similar case had happened in Rossendale 14 years earlier. In June 1747, Thomas Howarth of Wolfenden attacked his wife Sarah. She lived for a few days after the assault, but eventually died from her wounds. Howarth was apprehended and brought to trial. Like John Broadley, however, he was acquitted. After his trial, John Broadley disappears into history, but he probably outlived his wife by only a few years. A John Broadley of Clayton le Moors was buried at Church Kirk on Christmas Eve, 1768. Folktale and history. The traditional account of the murder of Ellen Strange and what actually happened are so dissimilar that it is first difficult to understand how the two stories fit together. Can they be reconciled? It seems reasonably certain that Ellen Strange lived at Ash Farm with her parents in the first half of the 18th century. In some way she met and married John Broadley. An exhaustive search of local parish registers has failed to produce a record of this marriage, but there are gaps in the documents. In addition, since the couple were married before the passing of Lord Hardwicke's Marriage Act in 1753, they could have been married in a Presbyterian meeting house. The marriage registers for Dundee Lane Chapel and the Presbyterian Chapel in Silver Street, Bury, have not survived, if they ever existed. As a married couple, John and Ellen Broadley were poor. Indeed, the inquest jury declared that Broadley had not nor yet hath any goods or chattels, lands or tenements. They appear to have lived an itinerant life, perhaps moving around to look for work, and may even have lived briefly in Stoneford. There were certainly Broadleys in Baxendon in the 1750s and in Stoneford itself in the 1820s. This would account for the fact in the traditional story that Billy came from Stoneford. In January 1761, Ellen was murdered on Holcombe Moor. When Hawken and Stevens investigated the case in the 1920s, they were told that Ellen was murdered at Stake Farm. This is clearly a faint memory of the fact that the inquest was held there. John Broadley was tried for the murder of his wife, but was found not guilty. As we have seen, one of the witnesses was Alice, wife of Henry Ellison, innkeeper. It is not proved possible to discover exactly which public house in Haslington was kept by Henry, but there's a strong possibility that was either the Bull's Head or the White Horse, where, according to tradition, Ellen was last seen alive. The inquest jury noted that the murder was committed at the first hour of the night, an expression meaning the period immediately after midnight, not the first hour of darkness. Had the couple been seen earlier in Haslington, possibly quarrelling? Perhaps Ellen left the town on her own to make her way to her parents' farm at Hawkshaw. The moon was near to full in late January 1761, and the night must have been reasonably clear for anyone to set out across the desolate moor. Was she overtaken by her husband, who may have been the worse for drink? The precise time of the murder prompts another train of thought that broadly raised the alarm if he was the killer. We can imagine the choice he faced on Holcombe Moor. He could try to escape and bring suspicion on himself, or he could claim that he discovered his wife's lifeless body. This was a story which could not be disproved, and it may well have saved Broadley from the gallows. At the site of the murder, Ellen's family or local people raised a pile of stones to her memory. It is possible they first marked the spot with a stake, which was much later thought to be the remains of a gibbet. The practice of adding another stone to the cairn whenever it was visited ensured that the crime and its victim were not forgotten. But why Ellen Strange's grave rather than Ellen Broadley's grave? To local people who had perhaps known Ellen since childhood, she would have been Ellen Strange to the end of her days in spite of her being married for more than 10 years. And so the name Ellen Strange rather than Ellen Broadley has come down to us. This then is the true story of Ellen Strange. There was no young woman murdered by her sweetheart, but instead a married woman apparently beaten to death by her husband. Though the public records have given us the main features of the story, many details are unlikely ever to be found. Ellen Strange's grave guards some of its secrets still. You've been listening to a booklet which was originally written by the Helmshaw Local History Society in 1989 and revised thanks to Unite North West Region, the Unite Bolton Branch and Bolton Trades Council, who raised funds to pay for the booklet to be republished. In the booklet, printed originally in 1989, the Society thanked all who had helped in the search for the truth about Ellen Strange, and said they are particularly grateful for the assistance given by Professor J. H. Baker of Cambridge, Mr. J. Broderick of Accrington, Mr. G. A. Foster of London, Mrs. R. Hurst of Haslington, Mrs. A. Morton of the Public Record Office, now the National Archives in London, Mr. A. J. Rose of Manchester, Mr. J. Ward of Haslington, and Mr. T. Woodcock of London. In the revised version of 2015, the Society also thanked the following for their help in making possible the printing of the second edition of the booklet: Martin McMulkin and Jim Mowat of Unite, Linda Sharnock, photographer Mark Harvey, and writer Mark Metcalf, whose original idea to put together the Rebel Road Project is what helped to have the booklet republished in 2015. The sources for the Ellen Strange story, as compiled by the Helmshaw Local History Society in 1989, the manuscripts, the National Archives, the Palatinate of Lancaster, Assize Roll, George III, Coroner's Inquisitions, Indictments, George III, and the Minutes Book, Second Series, 1759 to 1765. There are then the Lancashire Archives Church Registers from Church Kirk, Holcombe, Dundee Lane Presbyterian Chapel, the Quarter Sessions Petitions, and the Order for the Removal of John and Ellen Broadley. At Rawtenstall Library, there was the Diary of Henry Stevenson, 1877 to 78. Publications included newspapers, the Bacup Times, the 21st of August, 1875, Hazenden Borough News, the 28th of April, 1978, Lancashire Evening Telegraph, the 20th of April, 1978, and the Rossendale Free Press of the 23rd of November, 1974. Booklets and pamphlets were J.H. Baker, Criminal Courts and Procedure at Common Law, 1550 to 1800, in Crime in England, 1550 to 1800, edited by J.S. Cockburn of 1977. Richard Hawken, The Tragedy of Ellen Strange at Haslenden Story, 1924. Richard Hawken and Historical Notices of Helmshaw and Mewsbury, Patrick Stevenson, Part 4, 1924. And finally, John F. Skelton, The Hawkshaw Lane and Other Poems of 1872.